You are listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time on SQPN.com, the StarQuest production network, leading the way. This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. Create your own website or blog with a .com domain name for just $6.95 per month. Go to onceuponatime.sqpn.com and click on the Bluehost banner for more information. And by the Amazon store. Shop at Amazon by clicking on our Amazon link at onceuponatime.sqpn.com, and your purchase will help support our show. Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. And in this episode, we're going to talk about that wonderful episode that was all about the backstory of Rumpelstiltskin, a.k.a. Mr. Gold. And it was quite a cool episode, and we learned a lot about where he came from and why he acts the way he acts. With me to talk about this episode are our trusty panel members, and I think we've got a full-fledged panel today, which is totally awesome. First of all, Deborah Shaben, welcome to the show.
Hi, Father. It's very nice to be back.
Deborah, also a Disney expert co-host with me of the Secrets of Disney. Many of our current listeners to the Once Upon a Time show are also listening to the Secrets of Disney. And so she has that that Disney angle also to her expertise, which is awesome. Also joining us today, Mr. David Handlows. Hey, David.
Hey, Father.
Good to have you on the show, my co-host of Secrets of Tintin. And then, of course, we've got the two sisters also joining us today, Lisa and Shelley. Welcome, ladies.
Welcome, Father.
It's good to have you on the show as well. Big fans of Once Upon a Time. And I'm going to start with either of you, I guess, for the summary, the recap of what happened in this episode about Rumpelstiltskin.
I have it. Was that you, Shelley, or me?
That was you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This episode was Desperate Souls. And we start in fairy tale land, and we see a normal looking Rumpelstiltskin, not like we usually do. And he's spinning wool, and the soldiers come, and we learn that they are taking children upon their 14th birthday to serve in the wars, and there is a dark one who controls the people through magic. And we learn that Rumpelstiltskin's son is going to be taken away in a couple of days. The Duke's men recognizes Rumpelstiltskin, and we find out that he was a coward who ran away from battle in the Ogre Wars, and that they're going to take his son. But Rumpel begs, and Horder, the Duke, tells him he has nothing to offer except fealty and forces Rumpelstiltskin to kiss his boot, and then he, of course, kicks him. The beggar offers to help Rumpelstiltskin, and Rumpel is desperate to protect his son. And so the beggar tells him about this magic dagger that's used to control Dark One and suggests that Rumpel not just control it, but if he kills him, he will assume that power and magic. So Rumpel, of course, being desperate, sets fire to the Duke's castle and steals the dagger. And the Dark One tempts Rumpel, and he kills him. And when he's dying, you find out that the Dark One is really the beggar. And the name on the blade was like Oso, and it was changed as he killed the beggar, and he became the Dark One. It's changed to Rumpelstiltskin. And then Rumpelstiltskin comes back to his village, and he looks different, and he looks as he does, as we are used to seeing him. And he kills all the soldiers and comes up to his son, but his son is now afraid of him. But Rumpel is now as we see him. And then in Storybrooke, it's been 2 weeks since Graham died from the last episode, and Emma and Mr. Gold have a discussion about why she's not taking over as sheriff. She seems to be having trouble, you know, getting used to it. And Gold gives her walkie-talkies for Henry. Henry's depressed. He's worried. He's worried because the evil is winning, but good can't win. And Emma is about to go back and decide to become sheriff because I think there was some statute or something. After 2 weeks, the deputy becomes the sheriff. But of course, Regina walks in and says she's the mayor, and she gets to appoint the new sheriff within the 2 weeks. So she appoints Sidney Glass, the editor of the newspaper, to be the sheriff. Mr. Gold offers to help Emma become the sheriff. And he points out a technicality in the town charter. So it says the mayor can appoint a candidate. And so Emma confronts the mayor, Regina, and says she's now running in the election for mayor. For sheriff. So, of course, the newspaper starts printing things about a story about her, which is what they always do in politics. And you find out that Henry was born in a jail, and Henry finds that out. Emma decides that Gold will be her benefactor, and Henry, of course, warns her not to trust him. Emma confronts Regina about hurting Henry with the story, and as they're leaving City Hall together, an explosion knocks them down and traps them in fire. And Emma, of course, rescues Regina, as Regina thinks that she's just going to leave her, and she turns around and rescues her. And as they come out of the burning building, the newspaper's there, everyone's taking pictures and welcoming Emma as a hero. Emma finds out that Mr. Gold started the fire, and there's a debate for candidate, and she decides that she can't live with becoming a hero in Henry's eyes through the actions of Mr. Gold setting her up. And so she exposes Mr. Gold at the debate, telling everyone that he started the fire, and then she sulks away thinking she's lost everything. And she's at the diner, and Henry walks in, and he's proud of her because heroes expose bad people. And then Regina and Sidney Glass walk in and congratulate her reluctantly on winning the election. And Regina, of course, warns Emma again that Mr. Gold makes a great enemy. When Emma goes to her office later, Mr. Gold is there, and he lets her know that he planned the whole thing. He knew that she would announce that he set her up so that people would see her stand up to him, and that gave her power in the town. And again, he reminds her that she owes him now another favor. And now, as the sheriff, she's in a position to grant it to him.
And that's the story. Well, before we dive into the discussion of the themes in this particular episode, I want to just do a very, very brief roundtable of, you know, what were the things you liked most about this episode, or just one thing or one or two things. David, let me start with you. What did you like most about this episode?
Well, I liked obviously the Rumpelstiltskin backstory, just because there's always what makes him tick, and of course the fairy tales didn't tell us much about that, but this tells you a little bit more about what makes Rumpelstiltskin tick, and you can see that even though he's now Mr. Gold, he hasn't really changed. He's still he still has all the manipulative tricks with him he had back when he was in Fairytale Land.
Yeah, but at least we've seen him before he became truly dark and evil.
Right.
Deborah, what was your favorite part of this episode?
Two extremely weird details, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
The
okay.
first one was so obvious that I had to rewind on Hulu and watch it again just to make sure I wasn't seeing things. And it was the hidden Mickey, or not so hidden Mickey, that was in Mr. Gold's shop.
Hidden Mickey?
He has a very big, glowing Mickey Mouse telephone in his shop. And
oh, really?
Yeah, didn't notice that.
No, I've seen the Minnie Mouse near the entrance, but I've not seen the phone.
Oh, it was so vivid that it was like that. Everything else in that scene was dark, and here's this red and yellow and white Mickey Mouse phone. So it was very. I'm sorry, I'm a big Mickey Mouse hidden Mickey kind of fanatic, and there's actually a hidden Mickey in the new episode too that I was like, it's a hidden Mickey.
Really?
But
oh, cool.
Yeah, but we'll cover that.
Yeah.
Some other time. Anyway,
that's a big thing in Disneyland and Disney World. They've got all these hidden Mickeys, and so you're trained also to scan the surroundings for hidden Mickeys.
Anything that is Disney related, they will put a corporate symbol in there, just to kind of like a little teaser, if you would. So that and there's another little teaser that I'm not so sure it was if it was planned or if it was one of those writer issues where the writer was a fan. But, you know, Zoso, when I saw that, I'm like, who's the Led Zeppelin fan? Because they had that too.
I was wondering, what is that name? Where does that come from?
It is actually the symbol that Jimmy Page came up with for Led Zeppelin 4, the Symbols album, or Led Zeppelin 4 album. And so I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So
oh my goodness. Thanks for solving that. I've been racking my brain. It's like, this has to be an acronym. So what is the Z and the S? Could it be like S like Storybrooke? And then it's a Led Zeppelin reference. Oh my goodness.
Yes, it is.
Well, and there, I went and looked for this particular reference just after I saw it. Cause I'm like, well, I know he had to have picked it out from somewhere or some series of symbols, Jimmy Page originally. And so there is some reference, I guess, in some magic book that's written in French, and I wasn't able to find exactly what it meant, but it was a very interesting sidetrack that took me on. So
hey Deborah, I think it's supposed to be the astrological sign for Capricorn. The Z on the album is kind of a very Capricorn shape, and I'm a Capricorn.
Well, and I know that all four of the symbols on the album are definitely symbols that represent something to somebody involved with the album, and then they renamed it to Zoso or whatever, Zoso. And so I'm like, yeah, Jimmy Page fans, Led Zeppelin fans, unite. I don't know if it has anything to do with that, but I thought it was amusing.
Very cool. Now I think you're onto something. Shelley, your favorite moment of the episode?
I don't know if there's a favorite moment, but it might be when I saw the heart box that Regina had on the corner of her desk as mayor.
Yes.
She had the little box that had Graham's heart sitting right on the corner of that desk.
I was wondering about that. Did I see that correctly? Is that the same box?
It has to be. But the color, and we'll talk about this more, I guess, under themes, but color just keeps standing out to me, and there's got to be a meaning. It kind of like that movie with Bruce Willis. The I See Ghosts movie. I can't remember the name.
Sixth Sense.
Thank you. And it came out later that every time they used red, it meant something. Colors in this one were very, very vivid again. And I think I've kind of figured out a little bit of the meaning behind them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Definitely want to hear that theory in our later discussion. But first, Lisa, your favorite moment in this episode.
I guess I wasn't expecting to get Rumpelstiltskin's backstory so soon, but I just fell in love with it to see the transition from him. And then, of course, all magic comes with a price. I mean, it was like, oh, that's why he's always saying that.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, because he was a desperate soul, obviously the title of the episode, and he preys upon desperate souls. And I just loved seeing what happened to him, and he's repeating it over and over and over with other people. But the difference is he warns them. He tells them up front, magic comes with a price. We all have choices, you know, making a deal you don't understand, because that's what happened to him. And I just love seeing how that's part of his story.
That's a very interesting point you make there, that despite the fact that we perceive Rumpelstiltskin to be a bad guy, he is honest. He always mm-hmm. tells people the terms of the deal that they are about to engage in. So it's not that he's deceiving them or, you know, luring them into something. So in that respect, he is actually doing what he says himself. Because that's one of the themes also in this story is like, you know, I don't have a choice. But mm-hmm. yes, you do have a choice. So it's all about ultimately evil is a consequence of a bad choice that we make. And it's not just an evil one that makes us evil as well by, you know, deceiving us. And so in a way, it's kind of part of my current theory about the, you know, who's the true bad guy. Is Regina worse than Rumpelstiltskin? I was like, well, I think Regina is actually worse because she is actually deliberately deceiving people. And Rumpelstiltskin is, at least he's honest. He gives people a choice.
I kind of have this whole Star Wars theme going through my head, like, you know, there is good in him. I see it.
Hey, you keep wanting to see it in Regina, but then she goes and does things like, you know, squeezes the heart.
just for the record, I wasn't making the Star Wars reference this time. Just want to have that clear, okay? My favorite part of the story was that it finally kind of gave us some background about what another thing that Rumpelstiltskin has always been saying, and that is the power of the name. He's like, the name is important. Just give me the name and then I'll have the power. Well, now we know why, because the sword, or the dagger, of course, that was inscribed with a name, and once you had that dagger with the name, you basically had power over over the owner, or over that person. And so there is a magical dimension to having, or a power dimension to knowing someone's name. And I thought it put that and it's been going on in many episodes, but it put it in a new light. And that was perhaps my initial question as well, to just enter our next part of the discussion. Every episode of Once Upon a Time so far has had a particular fairy tale as the, let's say, the basic story of the episode. Usually they blend it with elements from other fairy tales as well. But I was a little bit confused in this one, because it seems to tell the story about Rumpelstiltskin, but it really doesn't. It's in no way does this episode reflect the original fairy tale about Rumpelstiltskin, which is much more about the gold and everything. In many ways, that has already been told, that story, in Once Upon a Time. So I was wondering, is perhaps this whole idea with the dagger and the name and the Dark One, does that refer to some kind of obscure fairy tale that I don't know? But I really don't know. Is anyone of you have any idea what, if there is a story that...
I got to tell you my first impression, because I guess I wasn't watching as closely as I had hoped the first time I watched it. And I looked up at the screen and I said, is that the Headless Horseman?
Oh, for the Dark One?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the only impression I had. I can definitely look around and see what I can find later and see if there's some sort of Dark One or... But nothing springs to mind.
Me neither. Of course, we've seen this theme of an enchanted sword, or a sword that gives you certain powers. That is definitely part of the fairy tale landscape. And then there's, of course, the... What's that fairy tale? There's a Disney movie based on that as well.
There's King Arthur and the Sword of the Stone.
Oh, of course, it's King Arthur. I just see myself pulling on that sword in what was it, Disneyland in Paris?
Yeah, Disneyland Paris, yes. We have a picture of that.
And I always...
Well, here's the big question. Yeah. Where's the dagger? And who is going to find it first, Regina or Emma?
Oh, because it's still there. Yeah. What a good point, of course.
He pulled that out, and I went, ooh, someone's going to get that.
Mm-hmm. And right
maybe
now...
Maybe that's why he's digging. Maybe that's why Mr. Gold is out digging, is he can't find his dagger.
Ooh, I like that.
Ooh, yeah, that is a good one. But does he really need it? He is the Dark One.
I guess
one.
As long as someone else doesn't take it.
Oh, that's it.
That's right. The power. It's like, as long as we don't give the power to somebody else and I can hold on to my own power.
Good point.
Right, because anyone who holds the blade and says the name has power over him.
It's a liability. If that dagger is gone, is lost, then his power might be in danger. Although he doesn't seem to suffer the same effects of this corrupting power as he did in the fairy tale world. I mean, in the fairy tale world, there's a clear distinction between the Rumpelstiltskin from before, who's just kind of meek and powerless, but looking pretty normal. And then when he returns as a Dark Lord, he's this ugly, you know, his dentist bill must have gone up 500%. Whereas in the real world, in Storybrooke, he kind of, you know, he actually looks pretty dandy, and he's well dressed, and I think he still has some bad teeth, but at least, you know, he's not as repulsive as he was as the Dark One. So I wonder if that also has to do with the fact that he is no longer in possession of the dagger. But I don't know.
Or what represents the dagger in Storybrooke? Maybe it's not the actual dagger, but maybe there's another, his weakness or kryptonite, you know, in Storybrooke that would be the dagger.
Well, now that you bring this up, it doesn't appear, you know, maybe I'm off, but maybe it doesn't appear that he has any power right now because of the curse. But if he finds the dagger, would he reclaim his power? Would he get it back?
That's good too.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't.
Or would
have
it destroy him?
Another.
Well, that's interesting because the beggar, the Dark Lord that we saw, he wanted, you know, he basically tricked him into killing him and taking the power.
Yes.
Away from him because it had so destroyed him. But we don't see Rumpelstiltskin having that issue with it. I don't know why not, but he hasn't gone that far. And so it makes you wonder, almost all of his deals involve children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trading or making deals for children.
Yes.
And you wonder if this all goes back to the fact that he did this to protect his son. And in doing it, he lost his son.
Yes.
And
I think that's
the underlying
drama.
Is there redemptive quality still left in him?
True. I mean, you see that his initial motivation to strike that deal to get that. Wow, there's some car in the background.
I'm so sorry. That's mine.
It's no problem.
That's not my car, but there's a trash. It's being
okay.
Right now. So I apologize.
No problem. But the initial motivation for him to actually get that dagger and kill the Dark One was to save his son. It wasn't a selfish, you know, longing for power or control. He wanted to basically protect his son, and he knew that being a coward, he needed something extra, some extra power. But in the process, he lost his soul. And so there's an intrinsic tragic side to this whole story because he thought he was doing the right thing, and yet it ultimately made him lose his son. Nevertheless, and so there's kind of I kind of like it's almost like a Greek tragedy in a way. It's like no matter what he would have done, he would have always have lost his son.
Well, and Rumpelstiltskin, when Balefire, his son, says he's willing to go, he's going to go and fight in these ogre wars, and Rumpel says it's a sacrifice, and he isn't willing to sacrifice his son.
Yeah.
But he was willing to sacrifice his own life to save his son, and then in process, we assume he lost his son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there going to be some sort of foreshadowing for the Storybrooke side of the story? So Emma was faced with a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Gold set her up to be the hero, and her choice was to tell the truth and possibly not be the hero and not reaffirm Henry's belief in good. So do right for her son or give it up and tell the truth and possibly lose him. And she made what you would argue is the moral correct choice in telling the truth and possibly losing her son. And she sacrificed herself for the good of others. Is that going to come back and bite her? Will she then end up losing her son? How does that choice play out? Because the fact that they put them back to back, that she made another deal, even unknown in a way, with Mr. Gold. Another one, which you kind of go, why did you do that?
She made a deal with Gold, though.
Well, she accepted his help. I'll put it that way.
Well, she's already made a deal a while back with Gold that he will owe her a favor to be defined.
Determined.
Right, and obviously Gold needed her to be sheriff in order to fulfill the favor, so that kind of begs that question.
Yeah.
But she was the desperate soul here also because she's watching her son lose hope. He'd given up. This is 2 weeks after Graham's death, and he's all, good can't win. Good could never win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because good has to play fair. There are no heroes. He's lost all hope.
Yeah.
And she's desperate to restore that. I mean, even to the conversation with Mary Margaret later, Mary Margaret's like, you know, what do you hoping for this, and Mary Margaret says, well, I want Henry to know that heroes can win. I mean, not Emma tells him, I want Henry to know heroes win. If I'm not the hero, if I'm not the savior, then what part do I have in his life?
Yeah. That's very, very interesting because I think it's one of the core themes in this first season of Once Upon a Time. It's this whole theme of hope and Storybrooke being the town where hope was lost and, you know, there are no happily ever after endings anymore. And Emma, as soon as she appears, there is new hope in the hearts of everyone. And hope is the transforming power in that village because it gives people a future instead of being kind of this in this frozen situation in time, and hope also makes people believe that ultimately good will win. So losing hope is the worst that can happen to a Storybrooke, because it would mean that Storybrooke would go back to where it was before Emma arrived. Yeah, it's and I keep thinking that all these children might have something in common as well. In this particular story, you've got. Do we ever hear Rumpelstiltskin's son's name?
Balefire.
How? Balefire?
B-A-E-L-F-I-R-E. Oh. Balefire.
Okay.
It's a Celtic name.
Interesting. I should have looked that up, what that means. So perhaps some of you can quickly Google that. But
it's a bright fire. It's a like a brightening.
Okay. So almost the opposite of the dark one. It's like
right.
It's fire, it's light. But he insists that he wants to go and fight. Rumpelstiltskin does not really respect that free choice of his son, and so decides to take things into his own hands. So he might be afraid of that, because his son is about to make the choice that he should have made in the past when he was a coward and ran away. And now
go ahead.
No, it's, I was fascinated by that. Why would he prevent his son from actually, you know, going ahead?
The son wasn't really interested in fighting in the beginning. The son was all worried, oh, Papa, they're going to come. My birthday's in 3 days. What are we going to do? I'm going to have to go. And I don't know if it was that he was afraid to fight so much as he didn't want to be torn away from his father.
Yeah.
But then when they run away and the Hordor, the Duke's men come upon them, he says, I know you. Where do I know you from? He can't put the name to it. He's doing spindle shanks, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Balefire names his father. He gives Hordor power over Rumpelstiltskin by giving him the name.
Good point.
That's when Hordor realizes you're the one who ran away.
Yeah.
Didn't he ever tell you? All his co-fighters, whatever, all his, you know, the men around him were all killed, all slaughtered, and he ran away. He didn't stay there and get slaughtered like she should have done. And he says, your mother left, you know, she couldn't live with a coward. But it was the son that gave away the power with the name. And then he humiliates him in front of his son.
Yes.
And his son isn't willing to go fight until after that scene.
Because he doesn't want to follow his father in you know, and be a coward as well, or
everything about his father and his mother have been challenged to him. And then his father goes and steals the dagger. His father's got this plan, but when he comes back, he's changed. He's now, you know, Rumpelstiltskin, the Dark One. And now he's like, I'm not afraid anymore. I'm protecting what's mine. You know, are you afraid, son? He's like, yes, actually, I am.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that in the way they told this story, they also seem to make references to another very famous character in Goethe's stories, which is Faust, the guy who struck a deal with the devil. And in many aspects, this story has elements of that as well. You know, the original story, of course, is about probably a magician or alchemist, and this Faust strikes a deal with, or he's in trouble, I think, and then he needs help. So in that respect, similar to the situation of Rumpelstiltskin, who is also kind of powerless, and he needs a bigger strength or a bigger power to prevent, you know, disaster from happening. And so Faust calls upon the devil, and the devil sends Mephistopheles, a representative, who makes a bargain with Faust. Mephistopheles will serve Faust with his magic powers for, I think, a couple of years. But then at the end, the devil will claim Faust's soul, and he will be eternally damned. And I think that the original term was about 24 years. And so you've got that same dynamic here, too, where you've got this evil one, and we discover that it's actually this homeless person that is bagging at the side of the road, and Rumpelstiltskin gives him some an alm, you know, it gives him some money. And that's how the two get to talk. And so it's ultimate, and you could say that in a way it's almost a devil in disguise who is sitting there, and then Faust claims that power, not really knowing or not realizing that that will actually basically mean that he sells his soul to the devil, unless someone else will come and claim that sword and he will be delivered. And so I think it's an excellent point that you made earlier, that is probably something that we will see in the future, where, you know, I keep thinking as well that Rumpelstiltskin has some, you know, there must be a redemptive arc. He is now in this kind of situation where he strikes deal upon deal upon deal, but it only causes people to become, you know, it doesn't resolve anything, because the origin is evil, and so it does not make people happy. And ultimately, you think that there must be still good in him. That's not what he wants. He wants people. He wants to help. It's just that whatever he does, since it's done with the power of evil, it can never actually bring about happiness and something good. So we'll see if there's someone. I keep thinking that might actually be a good story arc for Regina, where in her hunger for power, she wants that dagger. And she somehow wants to prevent Rumpelstiltskin from, taking her power. And then that might be her ultimate demise, where she claims that dagger. But what would happen? She would become even more evil. That doesn't make sense.
Or she'd control him to do her evil, which she can't control him. And I think that's something in this episode you see over and over, that Regina is really irritated that, you know, Gold or Rumpelstiltskin, you know, set her up for all of this and gave it to her, but then she can't control him. And he's still not really on her side. No. And we don't know whose side he's on, or he seems to have his own agenda and motivation for what he does. And we don't know what it is yet.
That's another good point. You keep wondering why Rumpelstiltskin acts the way he acts. Or Mr. Gold. We know why Rumpelstiltskin became the Dark One and what his motivation was, because he wanted his son. But what about Mr. Gold? And why is he constantly trying to get power over people's children? Is it because he ultimately is still searching for his son? Will we see his son in Storybrooke? Will he appear somehow? I don't know. It's kind of weird.
I think it would be crazy if they didn't introduce his son somewhere along the line, whether it's sooner or later. But you wouldn't leave it open-ended like that without having a plan.
I read a really kooky theory about the son.
Okay, go ahead.
And it's really kooky. You're going to go, no way. Some people on, and this is on Hulu, I was reading the comments on Hulu, somebody thinks that Graham was actually Mr. Gold's son, Sheriff Graham.
He was. I don't think that works.
What was his story? That he was raised by wolves.
His parents abandoned him, and he was raised by wolves. But Balefire's parents didn't abandon him. We just don't know what happened.
Yeah, but that was the kooky theory, and I'm interesting.
I also heard a kooky theory that his Rumpelstiltskin's son is Henry's father.
Rumpelstiltskin's son.
Oh.
That would be
a weird twist, wouldn't it?
And we cannot really talk about the episode after this one, because Shelley, you haven't seen it, I think.
I know, we'll have to save that.
Let's say there might be more to this.
Yeah, you know these writers are coming up with something really good.
Interesting. There are some cookie theory. There are some theories here in the chat room as well. Inge, who brought up this similarity with the story of Faust, says, you know, in this deal that Faust struck with the devil tells him that he can fulfill all his wishes. He only needs to sell his soul. And then Faust discovers the mess that he made and how big his troubles are when he falls in love with Gretchen. So she's wondering, have you already seen a character called Gretchen in Storybrooke? And I was like, Gretchen? No, not really. But Gretchen is actually short for, here it comes, Margaret.
Really?
And who's called Margaret? Mary Margaret, Snow White. The plot thickens.
Nah.
The Americans are going, no.
Nah, it's too complicated.
That's well known over here. That requires, you know, higher education and literature.
Well, they might spell it out for us later on.
But I have noticed that every time that Gold refers to children, he calls them precious. He did it in The Price of Gold, the one with Ashley and the baby. He called it something precious. He has something precious of mine. Mm-hmm. He tells Emma in the beginning, enjoy your boy. Enjoy these walkie-talkies with your boy. Time is precious. The thing about children, before you know it, you lose them. He says it again somewhere else. I've forgotten where. But every time he says that word, now my little ears go up. Precious. He's talking about kids.
Okay, thinking of the word precious, because now when I think of that word, I think of Father Roderick, your impression of Lord of the Rings. did you?
And
I'm not a big Lord of the Rings person, but I was reading. Someone mentioned that they think the dagger has Lord of the Rings ring qualities, because when Rumpelstiltskin possesses it, you know, his appearance changes, his mind changes, you know, kind of like the ring in Lord of the Rings, and they were comparing the two.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Actually,
there is secret writing on it, just like that one ring.
Mm-hmm.
Although on the ring, it's not a name. It's just, but it's true. There is a similarity here that the ring actually corrupts literally, and the owner at first doesn't really realize it, but it's because the owner, the person who takes the ring, thinks that will give you power, but in reality what happens is that the ring takes power over you. And with the dagger, it's a very similar process, where at first Rumpelstiltskin thinks that once he has the dagger, then he will own that power, and he will use it to do good. It's what he tells his son. You know, just imagine what I could do with that power. I would use it to save all the children.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. by the way, that's
there you go.
He wants to save all the children. So does he want to save the children from their parents, from the situation? Is he kind of a, what is it, Piper type of figure? Who wants to...
Pied Piper.
But we can't discuss what's going to happen next.
No, we can't. Not yet.
Because I think we're going down the wrong path because of what happens in the next episode.
Could be.
You think it's influencing.
We'll talk about that in the next show.
Yeah, another episode.
But,
yes, okay.
Good point. But anyway, it is true here, too, that Rumpelstiltskin thinks that he is in control, but ultimately evil controls him. And it ends with him actually killing the previous owner, the previous Dark Lord, and thereby it's kind of he's signing his own fate, and ironically, by killing the previous owner, he's setting him free. And so we see that same thing happening to him, where he is actually more and more realizing that he's suffering more, it's doing more evil than it's doing good, and so could be that what he wants ultimately to happen is to be delivered from the spell of this dagger. Is that his master plan? Is that what he's preparing in Storybrooke, that it's somehow he tries to lure other people into taking over that power so that he can be free?
That's interesting. One, for two reasons. One, can he be delivered from the power without being killed by the dagger?
Mm-hmm.
But two, and I've been meaning to bring this up in a lot of different episodes, but they changed the opening between The Heart is a Lonely Hunter and Desperate Souls. They give a little bit more recap now.
Oh, did they?
One of the things that changed is in the introduction before the episode begins, you see Regina from the pilot holding up the book, and she's looking in the mirror. And it's interesting to me that we use labels on Twitter and here, and we say OUAT, Once Upon a Time.
Yes.
When she holds up that book, only the words Once Upon and Time have the big letters in bold and glowing. And it spells out, OUT.
Okay.
And they're all trapped. They're all trapped in this curse, and they're all trying to get out. Rumpelstiltskin is trapped with this power he wants out, perhaps.
That's what I thought, too, is that I think Rumpelstiltskin just wants out of... I think Mr. Gold, it just wants out. I think that's his motivation, is he wants to be back at home. And so whatever means to an end he can get, he's going to go with whatever side is going to get him back to home, whether it's Emma's, so I think he's more on Emma's side than on the Queen's side.
Well, if you think about it, this curse is supposed to make everyone miserable, right? Mm-hmm. And so he wouldn't be exempted from that necessarily.
Right.
So maybe he's just as miserable as everybody else, and but he knows about it.
Yeah. Well, there,
he definitely seems to be a tragic quality to his persona. And after this episode, I have to say that my assessment of him, even as Mr. Gold, has changed a bit. I was like, there is something sad about something lonely. And not truly evil to him. It's almost as if, you know, the dagger has tainted him, has kind of destroyed something deep inside of him, but it has not completely, you know, corrupted him. It's almost like a metaphor of original sin in biblical terms. It's like, it has damaged our freedom. It has damaged our capacity to do good and to love, but it has not completely destroyed it. It's still there, and it might still win. There's still salvation possible. Inge, in the meantime, in the chat room, is continuing her speculation about this whole character of Gretchen and Faust and the so I want to just mention it because she's doing a lot of background googling here. And Margaret, apparently in German there is the so-called Gretchen question. It is a direct question asked to get a direct answer to find out what someone is really up to, but it's very uncomfortable to the person who has asked the question because it requires a confession, which this person has tried to avoid until this point. Does that sound like Mr. Gold? I don't know.
Well, Father, I know
she's doing
that
pretty good
David's
research,
gonna have to,
considering she can't use Wikipedia today.
I know.
It's true. We're recording this during the blackout because of the SOPA thing. Oh, just Google it. Oh wait, no, you'll find Wikipedia and you can't read it.
Yeah.
Oh well, people know, but Wikipedia is
Father.
Black.
I know David and I have to go in a few minutes.
Yes.
Because. Okay, we're on our lunch hour.
Sure.
At work. But I wanted to tell you the color thing.
Yes, go
before
ahead.
Before we have to scooch off. And I'm sorry to kind of just jump in and grab the reins on that. The mayor's office. Do you remember the mayor's office? Every time they go in there, it's very stark. It's black and white.
Uh-huh.
And I can't take all the credit for this because it was my husband that noticed it. He comes in, he says, wow, look, black and white, no gray. Everything's black or white.
Uh-huh.
You know, very, very one-sided. But then I noticed the diner is gray. Every time that they're in the diner and it's got those, it looks like woods on the wall, on the wallpaper has like trees and woods.
Yes.
But the diner's always in gray. When Henry is despondent, he's wearing a real dark gray with red stripes. In a lot of the past episodes, we've noticed that Emma is wearing a red jacket. And in this episode, she stopped wearing the red jacket. She started wearing a brown jacket. Gold is wearing a red tie after the fire when Regina confronts him.
Mm-hmm.
But then the colors shift at the debate. When Emma makes the decision to tell the truth, to be good, to be the hero, to be the savior, the colors shift. All of a sudden, Regina's wearing the red shirt, and Sidney Glass is in a dark suit with a red tie. Mr. A reflection of all the best qualities, I love that. But Emma's wearing blue, and so is Mr. Gold. Mr. Gold is wearing a blue tie. Henry's wearing a blue shirt. Emma's wearing a blue shirt and a brown jacket. And I just couldn't help notice that there had to be a difference here. I didn't see a lot of green in this episode, but definitely the shift from red to blue. She made a decision to do good. She chose the right path. She was the hero. And all of a sudden, she's not wearing red anymore.
Interesting. Aww.
Now, I have not seen all of the other episode. I did walk through the room while it was on, and she's wearing blue in the next episode also.
And a brown jacket. She wasn't wearing her red one. I noticed that in the last episode.
That very, very last scene, when she goes and Mr. Gold pretty much tells her, you know, yes, I knew that you would do that. I set you up. The whole thing's a setup. And now that you're sheriff, you'll be able to repay your favor to me. He's in like a, not quite lavender, but it's a pinky purple, very bright colored shirt. And I couldn't help but notice that's a mixture of red and blue. Purple is a combination of red and blue.
Oh.
So he's kind of still in the middle there. Anyway, so I noticed those little things and it was interesting. So
fascinating color theory. I wonder, I mean, if that is true, then they've given this show some thought on the visual level as well.
Well, you can tell they've given it thought just in the dialogue. I mean, that's one of the things I really love about this show is Regina's telling Mr. Gold he trifles with technicalities. And he says, well, he likes the small weapons, you know, the needle, the pen, the fine points of the deal. And now we know why, you know, the whole backstory there. But then she comes back later and she says Emma has no, you know, claim to him legally. And he looks at her and he says, now who's trifling with technicalities?
Yes.
Oh, but they obviously put a lot of thought into the dialogue because... And I've started watching it with the closed captioning on because you just can't take anything they say at face value. You have to think about why did they say that word particularly. But my favorite word that they used in the whole episode is when she said he makes a superlative enemy. Superlative, someone showing off there in the writer's room. So.
I did think that was an odd word choice because you don't usually see them use big words, you know.
So how come every time Mr. Gold knocks on Emma's door and he comes in, he calls it an intrusion? Forgive the intrusion. Is that purposeful, or is that just a, you know, just a culture thing that someone in the writer's room or that the actor uses? But twice he's come through that door and he says, "Forgive the intrusion."
I don't know. Could just be the kind of a speaking style. I'm not sure if there's anything more to that, but who knows? It's clear that this is one of those TV shows where the actors are definitely not ad-libbing.
And, no.
It's very scripted, and every single detail could have meaning and probably has meaning. I mean,
and you know what's funny? That's what these writers do so well. We don't really know what they've intended to make us speculate on, or we're just coming up with stuff on our own, and we don't know what their intention is. And that's kind of what's fun about it is it's so rich. It's so full of stuff to talk about. And the writers are probably sitting back going, oh, yeah, I didn't even see that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I think they've tied it in on purpose. I mean, when Henry is fretting that good always loses because good has to play fair, did you think back to Jiminy's parents in that episode about Jiminy Cricket, the still small voice, when Jiminy's parents say good is weak?
Mm.
Good has to play fair, so it's seen as weak.
Yeah. The same writer who wrote this episode wrote that episode.
Oh, still, interesting.
It was the same writer for both episodes. Mm-hmm. And
when
you think of it that way, you can see some of the similarities with the themes and the morals and the way it's very lots of levels in this episode, just like that episode, which I think is why they can be a favorite or really investigate.
Oh. Yes. And I think it's just one of the reasons I think that this show is so successful, because it makes you want to rewatch the episode, even if you've seen the ending. Then all of a sudden you're like, so what did I miss in what led to this ending? And you want to go rewatch it. And just before I started recording this show, I had the weirdest experience because we also have a show about another much less successful ABC show, which is called Pan Am, and our podcast is called Secrets of Pan Am. And so I watched two episodes of Once Upon a Time back to back, and then I watched an episode of Pan Am, and I was looking in the background. I was like, wait a minute, that statue. And I paused the image, and I was like, what does that statue mean? Why is that a bird? And then I was like, wait a minute, I'm not watching Once Upon a Time, I'm watching Pan Am. It doesn't mean anything.
Probably not as deliberate in that show.
It's no, not at all. Oh my goodness. Anyway, for those of you that are...
One thing we didn't talk about with this episode was they had one nice scene of Mary Margaret and David, of them together, and kind of, showing us that angst and that tragic romance they're involved in, and reminding us that there's some unresolved issues and pulling them together that
absolutely.
We're going to see in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
And it was done very well, in my opinion.
There, too, the question is going to be, will it be a happy ending, or is it going to end in tragedy?
And how many seasons are they going to make it play out?
That, too. Well, I think that they are in pretty good shape right now. The show just came back with the Rumpelstiltskin episode. It was just for the American listeners. It was the first, or actually for the non-American listeners. I know that we have now lots of listeners from the UK as well, because that's the show has just started there.
Oh, good.
So welcome. And but the Rumpelstiltskin episode was the first one after the winter break. And before Christmas, the numbers were going down a little bit, and so people started to worry. It's like, oh, come on, this is such a good show. Please don't let this show be canceled now because it loses interest. And then with these two episodes, the last two episodes, numbers were up again, and they were right where they were at the at the peak of the show. So that's very good sign. After winter break, the show retains its audience. It's just, I think, it's an homage to the quality of the writing and the just the love that goes into the show. And I think it will certainly get to the end of the season and probably way beyond that, because there are so many. I was just looking at the pawn shop again, and I see so many objects, and it's like every object has story.
A story.
So you can at least do two or three more seasons without a problem. So rich, and there are so many different characters, and we constantly get to know new characters as well. That's the great advantage of having these fairy tales, and then having counterparts in Storybrooke. It means that even if one story thread doesn't work anymore, like with Graham, he's gone, but the show goes on, and there's so many other characters that you can spin a story with, no pun intended.
That was heartbreaking, though. I liked Graham, and I was anxious to see him develop as a character, so I just hate
it. I know.
A lot of people were disappointed that he didn't magically resurrect in this episode. It's like, he's really dead.
It's TV, you can do it.
But it's very important for the believability or actually for our emotional investment. If people die and then they turn out to, not have died, and then there are no consequences, and so you don't invest in characters anymore. So this likable Graham's basically, I think, the sacrificial lamb that will make us believe that anything is possible, and they can kill off your favorite actors. Well, not the actors, but the characters. And with Lost, it was very much like that. They deliberately killed some people to make us invest more in the story. Otherwise, it's like, oh, well, what does it mean? That person is going to reappear.
And it really worked on Lost, too.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
We thought anything was possible. And that's kind of how they set it up with Graham. He was a main character, and now he's gone. And you think, oh, well, shoot.
Well, and then just to prepare ourselves emotionally, they usually kill off people right before a break. So they did this before the winter break. There will be another killing before the end of the season. It's going to end with a cliffhanger.
I think it helped here with the ratings that they ran the marathon here on Was it New Year's Day? I think it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They ran a marathon. And from talking to family and friends and stuff over the holidays, a lot of people either hadn't heard of the show or had heard of it, but hadn't watched it. And so having that marathon where they could set their DVR or catch some of the episodes or the pilot, I think it helped a lot of people catch back up and go, oh, I've been hearing about that show. I need to watch it. And so I think a lot of people suddenly, are catching back up and getting in tune with the show.
Yeah, I think so too.
Exciting.
Okay, let's take a short break here.
These stories, the classics, it's a reason we all know them. They're a way for us to deal with our world. A world that doesn't always make sense. Believing in even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
Let me take advantage of this short break to remind our listeners of our sponsors. This show is made possible by Bluehost. It's a hosting company with great service and very affordable prices. For $6.95 per month, you get unlimited storage space and bandwidth. So if your blog becomes a huge hit and every single Once Upon a Time fan or Oncers, they're called Oncers nowadays, discovers and wants to read your blog, you will not get billed for the extra bandwidth. So it's a fixed price, and you get a .com domain name with it. But what I like most about Bluehost is that if you are not technical and you don't know how to set up a blog, but you still want one, then it's just a one-click installation. They've got these buttons, and it tells you, just, you want to have a WordPress blog? Just click here. And then you wait 2 minutes, not more than that, and then boom, you've got your WordPress blog, and you can make it, you know, you can add any theme to it, and it can look professional like any other blog, or even better than many blogs, and it's all included in the price. So great deal. If you want to sign up and start your own Once Upon a Time blog or blog about anything else, make sure you go to Bluehost via the link on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com. There's a little Bluehost banner, and in that way, not only will you have a great blog, but you'll also support the show. Back to Once Upon a Time. Normally, we have a segment about names, so I'm going to play that jingle, but I must be honest, I don't have that much information.
Do you think we need code names?
Isn't Cobra our code name?
That's the mission. I mean, us. I need something to call you.
Oh. Well, I don't... You can just call me Emma for now.
Okay, well then, I'll see you later, Emma.
The power of names. You only need a name. That's all you need. That's what Rumpelstiltskin says all the time. And so we've seen time and again that names have a meaning and matter. And so no name in Once Upon a Time is chosen by accident. But we've, at the beginning of this show, already solved the most mysterious name. And that was the name on the blade, Zozo. And I was totally, you know... I was thinking that this would go in a totally different direction because, of course, you had to kind of say the name, I think, to get to power. And I was like, Zozo, if you turn the blade around, it could also be Ozos, you know, and read the other way. And so I thought that was the thing, that he would hold the dagger in the wrong way and pronounce the wrong name, and somehow that would, I don't know. But it turns out that Zozo is just a reference to, what was it again?
Like Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin. There you go.
So, well, that's maybe it's just my reference, but you know, maybe is a reference out there that I haven't found yet.
No, I bet you that's it. there is another name, of course, the girl that is taken prisoner at the beginning of the episode. She is called Moraine. Nothing too special about that name. Moraine basically means brown-haired. And I think it's originally from Spanish origin. So, Moraine, Balefire was the name of Rumpelstiltskin's son. Well, as we said, it kind of means blaze or fire or something like that, or ardent fire. Kind of symbolically the opposite of what his father becomes, who is not really a bright fire. He is a coward, and now he becomes the dark one. So it's the opposite of fire. Which I don't know. Are we ever going to see his son again? Because he just kind of like disappears. What do y'all think?
I think most definitely. What will be fascinating is if when he shows up in Storybrooke, because you know he'll turn up eventually.
Yeah.
Will Mr. Gold, does he know him?
Yeah. And what will be the relationship between Gold
and... Will they know each other? Because a lot of people from the fairy tale world to the real world, they don't know who each other is. So
you're looking for someone, and I'm already kind of referring to the next episode and a crazy theory that I have.
Right.
His son should be, you know, the opposite of a coward. He should be strong, independent, courageous, kind of rough around the edges. You see where I'm going?
Yeah.
So anyway, well, that's all I'm going to say. He might return.
We have to talk about wild speculations and spoilers later. So.
That's true. That's true. And then we've got the big evil dude, the Kiss My Boot, which I was glad that I had captions on because I first thought he was saying something else. Kiss My Boot. My boot. Hodir. No, Hordor. That's his name. I don't think that Hordor means anything. It's, I think, originally a Scottish name. But I have not found any, you know, special meaning to Hordor. Except for it sounds kind of like Mordor. So it sounds like something evil from The Lord of the Rings or something. Yeah.
I looked it up. I couldn't find anything relevant to reference.
Yeah. Are there any other names? Of course, we've got the Gretchen Margaret theory from Inge in the chat room, but I didn't see any other names. Actually, this despite the fact that I really love the relational aspects of this story, there seemed to be less hidden details and
That's what I thought too. I'm like, wow, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think this one was just a lot about character development.
Which is great. Yeah. I mean, I like that. Mm-hmm. I really like that.
The episodes go back and forth between what they're about. And this one, kind of like Jiminy Crickets, was all about just developing motivations and letting you kind of see into the personalities of these people.
And it's probably also, it depends on the writer. And some writers will just love to insert all these hidden details. And other writers might just go straight for the... You know, this is the big story that I want to tell, and then just let someone else do all the hidden secrets. And
now there were two little things that evidently Sidney Glass, who is in the fairy tale world, he's the editor of the newspaper. In the fairy tale world, he's the mirror, the evil queen's mirror.
Yeah.
So evidently, before the debate, we have a scene of him checking himself out in the mirror.
Kind of funny.
And then also Archie, who is Jiminy Cricket in the fairy tale world, and he's the shrink in the real world. When he was emceeing the debate, when his joke failed, he muttered crickets.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I thought that was awesome. Well, embarrassing, crickets.
I thought those were two, just kind of funny little things that they put in there.
That was totally brilliant. I think it's almost time to wrap up the show, but as we usually do, I want to play, if I can find it, that is, the promo for the next episode, which was called True North. And I hope I can find it here on YouTube. Let's see, here it is. Let's see if it will play. Oh, it's been violated because of YouTube's terms of service. Now, this is what people that protest against SOPA are afraid of, that you can't post anything anymore because, you know, it's all about... copyright. As soon as you do anything that is copyrighted, fortunately the internet is the internet, so if you take offline one copy, there will be 10 more that pop up. It's just like dragons in fairy tales. So here's the sound of the trailer.
What are you doing in my forest?
Lost in one world.
Where are we going?
The home of the blind witch.
Alone in another.
Where are your parents?
We don't have any.
I promised them they wouldn't be separated.
Stop making promises you can't keep.
You've heard their story told.
No matter how you're tempted, don't eat anything.
But never quite like this.
I smell dinner.
ABC's Once Upon a Time. All new next Sunday at 8, 7 Central.
Clearly the story of Hansel and Gretel, and it looks fantastic. Just from the looks of it, I think we're in for a treat. No pun intended. I think it's going to be
great. You intended that pun.
I'll say no more. So, but fascinating episode. I've already watched it with a lot to talk about, and I think it reinforces some of our crazy theories, and it dispels some others. So, but you'll have to listen to the next episode to hear our theories about True North. Thank you for listening to this episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time. As I mentioned, this is part of the StarQuest Production Network, a network that is dedicated to producing lots and lots of podcast series, and we have many of them that you might enjoy if you like this one. We have a lot of Secrets series. We've got Secrets of Middle Earth, which is a show that is recorded inside Middle Earth, inside the game Lord of the Rings Online. We've got Secrets of the Hobbit with background information on the two Hobbit movies currently in production in New Zealand. We've got, of course, very akin to this show, Secrets of Harry Potter. If you like Harry Potter, if you like the books, the movies, you have to check out that show. Is one of our longest running shows, and we talk about all the hidden layers in the story of Harry Potter. I've got a weekly show called The Break, which is about everything that I'm passionate about, and so it also talks about TV series and movies, so you might want to check that out. We've got Secrets of Tintin and many other shows, way too many to mention here, but I want to mention Deborah's new show. Deborah is a new affiliate of SQPN, and Deborah, your show is called?
iPilgrim Podcast.
And that's about?
The Camino de Santiago. It's a pilgrimage to Santiago in Spain, and it's kind of a boy, it's a long walk, let's put it that way. And so my podcast is about that walk, but also other pilgrimages too.
and great stories to tell, because of course if you walk all the way to Santiago in Spain, you've got some stories to tell, and that's what the show is about. And then, of course, the two Kelly sisters have their own blog. Remind us what the URL is again.
It is soundmindandspirit.com.
Soundmindandspirit.com. And Soundmindspirit is also the name of the Twitter account that you can follow.
Yes.
Very well. And then David is co-hosting Secrets of Tintin, which you can find at tintin.sqpn.com. And with that, we've come to the end. Thank you for listening. See you soon here on The Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.